Welcome everyone to episode 11 of Ours is the Fury. As you may have noticed, we've been away for a few weeks. There was a break, but you know, the NASL fall season is about to start. You know, the World Cup finishes on July 13th, and that's also when we will have our first game against FC Edmonton. So it's going to be a rough transition from the World Cup to the NASL. But we're ready for it. We can't wait. July 20th will be the home opener at TD Place. And before we get started, it's my great honor to introduce Chris Hoffley to you guys, who the most avid listeners already know from our very first episode when Chris came on the pod while he was at the airport to discuss the very first game against the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. And of course, Chris works for the Ottawa Sun, and he's by far the most dedicated Fury journalist in the city, so welcome.
That was a lovely introduction. I feel like that beginning with Gian Gomeshi on CBC, when he talks for 10 minutes about
something. That's who I model myself after.
It's good to be here in studio. I'll say in studio, it looks remarkably like a living room.
Yeah, it's because we use the same studio as the Bill Cosby show. So.
It beats the airport lounge at Pearson, that's for sure.
And we have to get something out of the way before we even discuss anything else, and that is the Stony Monday Riot Community Cup defeat, where they lost 1-0 to the Bytown Boys.
Ooh.
All right, so the Bytown Boys have bragging rights for the next year, but there is going to be a rematch, and boy, are the Bytown Boys going to lose that one.
I'll practice every day for a year.
Was that the first annual time you've been in the Community Cup?
That's right. So I was actually doing mostly volunteering that day, but Ryan, Blogsmith, and Kendra were all on the Stony Monday Riot team and had a great day, right, Ryan?
Yeah, it was lots of fun. First game we bunkered, and we did very well. We only lost 5-0. And the second game, a great goal by Shannon, and so we lost to the Bytown Boys.
But she's technically on loan, right?
No, I think she's a full. I think she's on contract.
Okay.
Good ball control, deadly strike. Yeah.
But so, I heard the mascot came over, and even some Fury players and everything.
Yeah, they're great. The organization's all there, and a couple players were there in the morning, a couple in the afternoon. And
they were working in shifts because of the heat. I understand it. Poor Sparky was not working in shifts. However, yeah. He was just.
I really hope
roasting.
He has one of those mascot things with like a ventilator in it. Like,
and I understand this is inside information about Sparky for you guys here, but he has a fan in his suit, and he also wraps himself in ice packs.
No way.
Underneath, but he has to obviously keep reapplying the ice packs every so often throughout the day because they melt as ice does.
Oh wow.
Yeah, poor Sparky. He's a dedicated.
Yeah, when
dedicated flame.
They were advertising that job, and I was like, no.
I can't imagine anything worse.
But John,
I noticed you had a pretty cushy volunteer gig at the Community Cup. Were you security guard?
Yeah,
I was at the FIFA tent.
I volunteered to facilitate the World Cup games, for two of them.
Tough life.
Yeah, it was one of the toughest jobs available, I know. But I should mention, I was tasked to protect these very expensive pictures, and there were like 500 people in this tent, and they all had sweaty shirts and muddy jerseys, and they kept on rubbing against these pictures.
There were a lot of people in a very small tent.
Yes.
A good game, though. That was the Brazil game, was it not?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was almost all over for Brazil. And, of course, I'm heading to Brazil on Saturday, so I do want the hosts to still be... Yeah, I know. I lead a very tough lifestyle.
So the Community Cup was a success. I think as a supporters group, you raised well over $500.
Yeah.
Any of the listeners donated, thanks a lot. It's went to a good cause. Yeah, it was good. I think, did we win? Did we get the most donations?
Yeah, Sorry Monday Ride ended up with the most donations, which is great.
Nice. It's because we have this podcast, obviously. Yeah. Used our power for good.
Power of the media.
Yeah.
And then, you know, was the World Cup, but we're probably not going to discuss that at any great length. But is there anything that happened in the off season we should discuss? I mean, the biggest thing probably was Ryan Richter from TFC coming on loan to Ottawa Fury.
Yeah, that was the worst kept secret around town for a couple of weeks. He had been training with the Fury, and it took me a couple days to clue in, and I finally said, "Who is that guy?" So I kind of figured out who he was, and the team, you know, their contract negotiations and loan agreements aren't always a quick, fluid process. So I guess it took a couple weeks to get him locked up, and they finally announced it that's who this mystery man was.
So I've looked up that he can play several positions. Do you know, like, where we want to see him?
Yeah, I think he can definitely move between a right back spot, and he plays a lot of center back too. I think center back is what he wants to be here for, and I think it's hard to tell right now because they haven't been back for that long, and they haven't had the entire group together. But I think the idea right now is to have him have a look at him anyway in the center back spot with Mason Trafford. And then maybe have Mike on the left side and move Becky over to the right, and then have Omar as a guy that can
as a backup
can move around as needed. That's kind of the impression I'm getting so far. It's obviously not my decision, but that seems to be kind of a logical layout for the back line right now with Richter coming in. And I know he's here to play. He's going to play. It's not going to be maybe like. Or the last loan agreement Ottawa had.
I saw him live at the Community Cup as well. He's a big guy.
Yeah, he is.
More of a central back for sure than a right back.
He's not, however, related to New York Rangers Hall of Fame goalie Mike Richter. I had to ask him because they're both from Pennsylvania.
Right.
Have the same last name. I said it's too close a connection not to ask, but he... Not, and he looked at me like I was crazy for asking a little bit, but...
Yeah, Richter actually means judge in German. It's like one of the most common last names in Germany.
See, I've already learned something. We're like 5 minutes into this, and I'm getting educated by the German guy. I didn't take long.
Do we know anything about how long the loan agreement is, or is it just to the end of the season?
I assume it's just for the fall season. Like, I think that he might return to...
As per team policy, terms of the agreement were not disclosed. It was, I believe, the line... On any kind of contract, they don't talk. The team doesn't publicly, typically say. But my money's on right now that it would just be a fall season loan, and if there's any desire by both sides to extend that, depending on how he likes it here, and I know he's comfortable here already. He knows a couple of the guys he played with, Tony Donatelli and is it Nicky that he played with in Charleston?
Oh, okay.
So. He's played with a couple of the guys, and so it's not him jumping into a completely strange environment. I know he had some pretty productive conversations with Mark DeSantos, and Mark seems to have this great ability to sell this product that he's creating here, and it seems to get a lot of guys excited about coming to Ottawa to play.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's probably why Mason Trafford also extended his contract, because he believes in the idea, and, you know, he was ready to commit early.
Yeah, and I was talking to him... just the other day about that, and he said he likes it here. He was born in the States, but he grew up in Vancouver, so he's a Canadian guy at heart, and he likes being in the city, and he likes obviously the direction that the team's going, and he was under no obligation right now to re-up his contract, but I guess he just wants some stability. He knows that he's going to be here for at least another year and a half anyway.
And one player that left was Zakaria Mesudi from the Montreal Impact, who unfortunately didn't see much playing time. I think Blogsmith, you were pointing out that he played once in the V Cup.
Yeah, I think he came on as a late sub in the first Emerson game.
Quite a late sub too. Yeah. I don't know. I think you got to look at that maybe as a failed experiment early on. Not every roster is going to be right, but I think, you know, you have to assume that he wanted to come over here to play. He wasn't going to play with the Impact, and he didn't. You know, train here, train with the Impact. I don't know, he probably would have preferred to keep training back in Montreal if he had been given the choice, knowing that he wasn't going to play here. But, you know, live and learn, I guess.
Yeah, you can't get everything right, for sure. And then, you know, really everything has been overshadowed by the World Cup. There hasn't been too much else going on in the NAS offseason that I can think of. Ryan, is there anything else?
No, just some friendlies. The U23 Mexican team's playing San Antonio and Minnesota.
For the most dedicated soccer
that
fans.
Is the,
that
wow,
is a must see.
That's the best headline we can come up with. Yeah, it's been so...
Yeah, there's a bunch of strange friendlies. There's a whole bunch of U.S. Open Cup. There's some more July 8th, 9th. Eight teams left there. And two NASL clubs still in it, Atlanta and Carolina. So, and we've been playing, Ottawa Fury have been playing Premier League Quebec teams. So we're actually playing tonight in Assumption. And
tonight is of course Wednesday night.
You won't know until tomorrow. So but yeah, and then there's one more game, so we're playing three games against third division teams, so it's good. And it sounds like they're playing a lot of the academy players. Last game they played seven regular players and the rest were academy players, and they did the thing where they do more subs than normal, so they're getting their workout,
getting everyone moving.
So, I just wanted to add about Ryan Richter is they seem to be adding guys that have all won championships somewhere else before. And he's won a championship with Charleston, I believe. Yeah, in 2012 he won with Charleston, and he's been with other winning teams like Harrisburg and stuff. So, I've noticed Santos.
The guys, he likes guys that have some kind of pedigree. Wherever that is, you know, he's got players that have played all over the world, and
the major
they've all had success in one way or another in the sport, and that's what he was looking for. He was looking for strong, you know, it's really strong character guys that are like, I mean, you should see some of the practices sometimes now, even with breaks between games, like the guys are so intense, and you know, it's just like they're starting to look like caged animals, not having been able to play for a while. You can tell they're just gonna get out there and kind of come out in a big, big explosion of fury, dare
Ooh.
I say it.
Do you think that could be a problem, though? Like, too many leaders in the dressing room, or too many?
I don't think so. I think, I mean, you've got your designated leadership group with Richie Ryan, obviously, as the captain, but I don't think anyone, I think everyone respects Richie as a captain. I think that's why, you know, Mark DeSantos gave them all the chance to vote on who they thought was going to be the best leader, and Richie's name was the one that came up the most. So I think everyone respects that, but I think there's no one on the team really that's afraid to tell someone, you know, if they don't like something that happened on a drill or if they're not happy where someone's playing. I don't think anyone's going to, no one on that team shies away in the corner and goes, you know, just kind of let stuff happen there.
Yeah.
No one's.
But if I was some young rookie or younger guy, I'd be scared to tell Jeroen.
Oh, well, I mean, don't get me wrong. They know their play, you know. They
know the boundaries. Right?
Yeah. Jeroen's a tall fella.
Yes, he's a very big, intimidating man.
Yeah, especially if you're going head-to-head with him on a pitch, I imagine.
Yeah. Our nickname for him is...
He takes no prisoners, that's for sure.
Yeah, Jeroen, there will be blood. Omar, there will be blood, Jeroen. That was our nickname we gave him, like, down
in Rochester.
Yeah. He drew a little bit of blood there. Yeah.
All right, so let's take a break. You guys can listen to some music, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. So now, instead of looking at the NASL fall season preview and, you know, talking about every single game, I would suggest to you to tune into the podcast every week, because we will have a preview in every game. The first opponent is, of course, FC Edmonton away, the same day as the World Cup final.
No!
So obviously, I'm not going to go, you know, outside in Rio de Janeiro. I'm just going to stay in my hotel room and watch the NASL live.
Stream it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, can't miss that. It's the first game of the fall season.
Exactly. You know, priorities.
The World Cup comes every 4 years. There will never be again the first time the Fury play a fall season opener.
Exactly. On the day of the final, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Wait, what time is our game?
Seven?
Or five? So they overlap.
I was going to say three. Maybe one of us should look at a schedule sometime.
Yeah.
Because it's confusing because of all the different time zones, right?
It's pretty much right after.
Oh, it's right
World
after.
Cup final.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go. I'm a day of soccer. It'd
it's
be great.
It's similar quality soccer, so you won't notice much of a difference when you change over to NASL Live with their quality screens.
Streams.
Streams. Edmonton.
Streams.
Streams.
Screams.
I don't know. It should be a good one against Edmonton to start. It's a good way to start off the next chapter here, playing a Canadian team again. And they seem to already not like each other that much, just based on the few times they've already played each other in the two Can-Am games and then the one league play game. But, Tommy Heinemann coming on, gets in the last time and scoring that late goal. It's fun.
That was very fun, yeah. And, they know what to expect at FCM, and they've been there before. They know about the terrible pitch.
Oh, it's a new pitch.
Oh, they're right. They finally got their new pitch. Good point, Blocksmith.
No football lines.
Whoa.
Yeah.
We'd like to welcome Edmonton to the soccer world. Wow.
I don't know. The Fury couldn't say much about the pitch quality when they were playing on that dreadful mess at Keith Harris. That was an awful. I mean, I know they think a lot of the injuries that they've had, just, little bumps and bruises along the way, I think could probably be directly attributed to that, just playing on this turf that feels like concrete. Unless it's wet. They were always hoping it would rain before games because it's the only thing that softened it up.
And hopefully with the new pitch at TD Place, we'll no longer have this issue. And Chris, you mentioned to us off the record before that they're going to be training at TD Place. Is that correct?
Yeah, it looks like Monday will be the first Fury practice. The Red Blacks have already been in there, so it's about time. They're keeping it warm for the Fury guys. But, it looks like Monday they're going to train in the mornings there, which will be good because it'll beat some of that nasty summer Ottawa heat. I was talking to some of the guys today, and everyone, they're all like little kids on Christmas. They just want to get in that building. Not all of them have seen it recently. I know they went on a tour kind of around training camp time, and it was still very much under construction then, but it's going to be pretty sweet.
And it's going to be finished in time is what everybody wants to know.
Allegedly. the stadium itself, I think, is pretty much ready to go. There might be some guys painting and screwing on outlet covers as they do their first few drills. I think stuff around it is not going to be all ready yet. I think they're going to stagger the opening of some of the restaurants. So 1 week, one restaurant will open. The next week, something else will open. They wanted it all done for opening weekend. But I think if anyone's ever renovated a house or any kind of renovation, this is that on, a 10,000 time bigger scale, and it was never going to be done on time.
Yeah. For sure.
Hopefully the toilets are installed.
Yeah, that would probably be a priority, considering how much beer they're probably planning to sell at these events. Gotta have the working toilets.
And that will be, of course, our first game will be against the New York Cosmos at TD Place. And we don't know the exact numbers that the Fury are expecting to get in there, but we've been hearing ballpark between 10,000 and 15,000, is that right? Or a little less than that?
That's the rumor.
That's kind of the numbers that are going around. Could be, and there's still a couple weeks to go. So I know if they clear 11, they can clear 11, 12,000, they're going to be really happy, but they also like to pack the place as much as humanly possible. But they also don't want to just do it for the opening couple of games. They want to get people excited about it and kind of maintain a consistent level of excitement, so it's not just 13,000 people at the first home game and then 3,000 people at the next eight,
yeah,
or however many home games there are.
So if the New York Cosmos really signed Raul, which I really hope is true, you always see this rumor going hot and cold. That would be amazing to see him play.
Yeah, but we talked about this before. He wouldn't be ready for the 20th.
Oh, damn it.
Okay. Sorry to break your heart. But it's a perfect storm, really, right? It's like end of the World Cup, legendary North American team, New York Cosmos, and a brand new stadium that no one's been in.
Yeah, I mean, it basically markets itself.
Yeah. It's like, how can I not see?
And hopefully people will be riding that wave of post-World Cup excitement.
For sure. And the Community Cup volunteers will also be there with 100 people, apparently. So that's another 100 right there. And then hopefully some people from the Canadian football match a couple days before that will have had such an amazing time that they'll be like, let's check out the soccer game. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know it's interesting because the record is 13,161, I believe, was set by the San Antonio Scorpions, like for a league game. Mm. There's been bigger records for like friendlies against big European sides, but for a league game, that's the record. So it'll be
interesting. Within NASL.
Within NASL 2.0.
I think they can beat it.
Yeah, so.
That's my prediction.
I think they're going to beat it. The numbers I heard, the tickets they have sold, they're very close to beating it. So.
You all heard it here first.
Yeah. So
they will break the record.
So buy your tickets.
And after that, three days after, in fact, they will play the Rangers, which makes all of our Celtic listeners very happy.
Yeah, they're one of the biggest supported clubs, like, worldwide.
Yeah, they've got chapters of their supporters group everywhere.
Apparently two chapters right here in Ottawa.
Two.
Wow. Not just one, two.
So you have to think that a lot of people from not just Ottawa, just kind of anywhere close that would want to see the Rangers play, that aren't going to have a chance anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere else.
The only other place they're playing in Canada is Victoria.
Yeah, so you could...
2 days before, so...
That should be fun.
And Victoria is rumored to join the NASL, but this is, like, really off the grapevine and not anything factual.
Yeah. They're a PDL club right now, the Victoria Highlanders. They average around 1,700 a game. Their stadium can hold up to 5,600, their new stadium that they're in. There's been lots said about them potentially joining the NASL. There's still the foreign team rule in the NASL, so they'd have to have Virginia come in and actually stay in the league, and Oklahoma, and then there'd be room for another Canadian team.
So TFC fans always complain about their mid-season friendlies, and this will be our very first ever mid-season friendly in our franchise history. And then 3 days later, we have to be in Carolina to play an NASL match. And after that, we have another away match. So the first one against Carolina Railhawks and the second one against Minnesota United FC. So that's quite a tough schedule.
Yeah, it's busy. And I think they ran into that in the spring season too with a tough schedule with the Can-Am games wedged in there. And they just ran out of gas towards the end of it, so I think they're going to be more careful to manage, you know, guys' minutes and training around that time. That's a lot. You can call it a friendly all you want against the Rangers. These guys are going to come out raring for that one.
How are the Fury doing injury-wise at the moment?
They seem to be good. I know Sinisa Ubi-Peripovic, he...
Oh, Kendra! How do you feel about that?
I don't know. He hasn't said anything yet. Tell me what's going on.
I was a Sinisa fan. He hurt his, I believe it was a hamstring in the last training session before the final match. And so he was held out of the last game against the Cosmos, and he still hasn't gone back to full training yet, but he looks pretty good. He looks like he's getting close. A couple other guys were kind of nursing minor things, you know, training bumps and bruises. Nicky Patterson is getting very close. Mark DeSantos told me today that they were, on starting Monday, they were going to start ramping up his rehab training with the goal to get him back into regular training with the full squad kind of, you know, within the next week or so. So finally, he only played the first match of the spring season before he hurt his knee. Which may or may not have also had to do with the turf at Carlton. I won't belabor that point
damn
too
Carlton
much.
And but, damn Carlton security.
He's been, you know, they've missed him, and I know he just wants to get back out there and play. It's been a frustrating go for him on watching everything from the press box.
He had a career season last year too, right? So
he, and you know, when he's back at full strength, you're seeing it now with Tom Heineman. The guy just looks like he's just ready to explode. Like, one game wasn't enough at the end of the season. Like, you see him practice. Like, he's just such a fiery guy. An amazingly friendly guy off the pitch. But on the pitch, like, he's... I don't know if it's the hair or just the loudness. But he'd be a scary guy to run into, especially if you're a keeper.
Yeah.
Staring that.
We're a little concerned of his diet, though.
Yeah, he eats a lot of hot dogs.
Oh, is that the inside scoop from the spying? Yeah.
And,
they're good food, though, at those games.
On Twitter, he said something about eating a full bag of chips for dinner.
He's a big man. You gotta feed that. You gotta feed that machine.
Yeah, but he's a really nice guy. We've mentioned this before. Like he always comes up to us and thanks the fans. And, like, just very down-to-earth, very approachable.
Well, just as I was saying before, like, just another character guy on this team that they've seemed to have put... They'll have a lot of them, and they're just, yeah... they appreciate it. They understand how important fan support is for a new team in any sport. So when people pay attention and talk about them, they appreciate it.
Yeah. And if we mention how great the men are, you know, let's not forget about our women, who have been winning, as usual. And I think they're 1 point away from winning the conference title with, like, 3 games to go. So they're probably going to win it.
They're far in the lead of their, what is it, their conference?
Yeah, it's
their
conference.
They haven't lost a game at all, actually, just one tie and 8 wins. So they currently have 25 points, and I think their closest opponent is 14 points. So I think they're safe.
Kind of takes the mystery and the excitement out of the whole W League thing.
Yeah, they're almost too good, yeah.
But they are pretty impressive. They've got a lot of firepower, even when they don't have their full roster. I mean, they handled London on the weekend. They didn't have their captain, Lisa Marie Woods. They still managed to run away with that one 4-0. And without any kind of trouble at all. I don't, their possession was probably 85, maybe 95%. It was constant.
Yeah, their last 3 games are against their 3 toughest opponents, so, but they're all at home. So they're playing Laval on July 5th, this Saturday. And then on Sunday, the next day, all these games are at 3 p.m. They're hosting Quebec, which is actually probably my favorite team to watch, mm-hmm. besides the Fury.
It's nice to have them home for a while, because they played two home games and then went on the road for like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And the Sunday could actually draw some people, because there's no World Cup game on the Sunday, I believe.
On the 6th, yeah. And then they wrap up the season against the only team that could get a result against them this year, the Toronto Lynx. So all those games are played at Algonquin. So
yeah, and it's quality soccer too. It's worth checking out if you haven't seen it.
And the other thing we should mention is two of our players are on the U20, they went to the U20 women's camp to represent Canada. So Buchanan and Lawrence went. And so that's good news for developing our women's team.
Yeah, having Kadisha Buchanan she hasn't been around a lot because of her national team commitments at various levels, but she's unbelievable. Like, she is, you know, she's already been mentioned in the same breath as Christine Sinclair, just in terms of what they think she can do already as an 18-year-old for women's soccer in the country. And you saw it in that friendly against the States. She's just she's a powerhouse, and, you know, she can obviously stop the best players, but she can put the ball in the net too. So it's, you know, if you have the chance to see her whenever she is playing a game in Ottawa, she's something to watch.
Yeah, and like Kendra just said, she's on the U20 squad. She's going to that camp.
Mm-hmm.
And that just blew my mind. I thought she was like 23.
Oh, yeah,
24.
No, she's young.
So she's playing way above her level. And I know it's a good, come see these 3 games, kind of a preview of what we're going to see in the World Cup. And
yeah.
I bet you some of these players that you see here this weekend in Ottawa, they're going to be playing in the World Cup.
I would think there'd be a couple of them for sure.
Yeah, Buchanan for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so come see them dominate and destroy.
As the Fury do.
Yes.
All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back and ask Chris some questions.
Uh-oh.
Alright, the first question I would like to ask you, Chris, is a quite a general one. I'm just wondering, what was it like, you know, for the first time in your career, following a professional soccer team so closely, week in, week out, and, like, how was it when you first started, and how have you grown, and how has it all been so far?
It's been great. I wasn't really sure when I was offered the chance to take this beat, what exactly was going to involve, but it's been a unique situation for me too, getting the opportunity to start covering a team from the ground up, a team that hasn't played before. It's a brand new sport in town, and, you know, so I feel kind of that responsibility to help grow that interest anyway, and get people into it by reading what I write. But it's, you know, in terms of how I've grown with it, I mean, I understand soccer a lot better than I did. I mean, not to say that I didn't understand it, but there's a lot of, you know, you watch them practice every day, most days of the week, start to pick up on a lot more of the little nuances in the sport, and how, and just realize how talented some of these guys are when you're that close to them. But no, it's been fun. I'm looking forward to finally getting over to TD Place for sure. Getting a press box that actually has some elbow room.
That's all he cares about. He just wants to go into the press room.
I just want to sit comfortably.
And the food, right?
I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be food. I hope there's going to be food. But no, they treat us well. They give us, they feed us and they water us.
And what has the reception been like from the readers, like from the Sun readers? Like, are people like happy that there's so much dedicated to soccer? Or
yeah, I think it gives people something else. I know, you know, for the Sun, sports has always been a big thing for us for years. You know, the paper's been around for 25 years, and it's always been a big part of what people pick the Sun up for. So, yeah, I think, you know, I haven't had anybody email me and be like, stop writing so much soccer stuff, I don't care. So that's good, because that would be, you know, that would be soul-crushing. But, yeah, no, any feedback I've had has been really good. And, you know, yeah, as I said, no one's egged my house. So I appreciate that.
Very good. Now, do any of you guys have any question?
I just had a question about the goalkeeping coach situation. If there's any plans to bring in a new keeper coach, I haven't seen anything there. And I was also wondering what happened with, it seemed really abrupt.
Yeah, it seemed fairly sudden. I think it was fairly sudden. I don't know if it was sudden in Dave Bellemare's case, because he was, you know, he obviously something that he was thinking about. But in terms of a new guy, yes, they're definitely obviously planning to bring one in. That should happen soon. I've heard that there's someone that they have in mind. They haven't made anything official yet, so I don't know if maybe they do have someone picked out and they're just working on a deal with him to make it official. But they haven't. I've just heard rumblings that there's someone close to being named or potentially anyway, and so that could come out. They're gonna want to have that in place well before the season starts. So I would expect something, maybe next week. It's all hard to say with that kind of thing. In terms of Dave leaving, I think with him, and he was pretty frank with me when I asked him about it, just saying, you know, he was a really busy guy. He was coaching the keepers for the NASL team, for the women's team, and he worked with the academy kids at various levels. So he was overextended, I think he would probably agree with. And I think he just got to the point with him where he didn't want to do it quite so much, and he thought he just wants to move on and do something else. He has at least one kid. He might have two fairly young kids. So spend some time. And I asked him what he was going to do next. He said he was going to garden for a while. And he expected to have some other offers in the soccer coaching world of some kind. So he'll, you know, there was nothing acrimonious about it. Everyone wished each other well. They just, you know, wanted to move on. And he, I think, thought there's other things out there for him.
In terms of players for the fall season, what are you expecting? Anything notable from anybody?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the spring season and the starting 11 in a lot of respects stayed pretty static. I think, you know, looking at a guy like Oliver, for instance, he's a guy who has, I mean, there's no questioning his skill. You watch him in training and he's just an incredibly talented guy. He only scored, I believe, twice in the spring season, both in one game. I know he's a guy that they count on for more offense. So I think even if he asked him, he'd say he knows he has to produce a bit more. You talk about like pleasant surprises. Carl Hayworth blew a lot of people away. I don't think anyone was expecting him to walk out of training camp and into a starting spot, but he's proven it. I mean, he's really fast. He's not a big guy obviously, but he's quick and he can move the ball, and I was just talking to someone today about that. You know, as soon as he gets a goal, I think they're going to start coming for him in bunches, because he just seems like that kind of guy. Tony Donatelli too, obviously someone I don't know if anyone, not everyone knew a lot about, but he impressed a lot of people. He scored a lot. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys that are going to keep growing. I'd love to see Hamza Elias play more than he has, which is not a lot, because he's another guy. You know, he's another raw talent. He's young. He's gonna be cool to watch once he, you know, just needs to mature a little bit as a player.
Yeah, he's averaging a card every 10 minutes.
Yeah, he gets on. He gets. He's, you know, he's fiery, and he gets on there, and he gets maybe a little carried away, maybe a little, you know. Obviously, you know, everyone's excited to see more out of Tommy Heinemann and Nicky Patterson when he gets back in the lineup. There's not a lot of mystery around how good a striker Heinemann can be. He's a big body. He's hard to move around, and he can obviously score. And Patterson, again, he's just a guy that's been talked about a lot. He was an exciting signing as the first one, and he's a guy that people want to see prove what he can do.
So Dvalek Gorik's done pretty well this spring season. Do you ever see a chance that maybe DeBellis or Bush get in there?
I think at some point you have to mix it up a little bit. I mean, I think there's no question Gorik is the number one guy for now. I'm not sure if he's signed past this season, or, you know, I know he likes it here. I know he's been having a good time in the city, so he may, you know, if he sticks around, I think it's his ball to run with, so to speak. But at the same time, he can't play every game for all of eternity, I wouldn't think. Maybe he can. If you asked him, he'd tell you. He was, again, like, pretty blunt about it when he first got to town. He says, I came here because I want to play, and they're going to have to kind of take the ball away from me. I think DeBellis is going to get a chance at some point. He's incredibly talented. Before Gorik was signed off his trial in training camp, DeBellis was going to be the guy. And to his credit, in a good mood, nice guy, doesn't seem to pout or sulk or have any sense of entitlement that he should be playing. I think he knows that he has to earn it. And I think it's going to take probably a stumble or two from Gorik, or, you know, or whatever reason that he couldn't play a game. I'm not going to jinx him by saying any kind of injury or anything, but you just never know in soccer, things happen. So, yes, long story short, I think DeBellis will play at some point. Bush, still young, he knows, I think, that he's the third guy in the totem pole, and that he has to work and grow a little bit.
But, and he's a baby for keepers, right?
Yeah, he's 19, really young, and he's a good personality, too. He's always seems to be having, you know, he trains really hard for a 19, 20-year-old guy. I think he just turned 20, and he, you know, he's a guy that's taking the experience right now as a first-year player to use it as a growing experience and not just come in there and think he's going to steal the show as you said, you know, pretty young kid for a goalkeeper.
So, Chris, would you say that overall most players are pretty happy with being in Ottawa and with the vision that Dos Santos has for the club and just in general? Or do you think there are certain players who you know, see this team as like a jumping board to somewhere else? Is that an English expression? Jumping board?
Yeah. Okay, springboard.
Good. Springboard.
Yeah. Yeah. Good enough.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think it'd be crazy if some of these guys, especially younger players, didn't look at it as some kind of springboard onto other things. I think, you know, every young player wants to make their mark in the game in any way that they can. So, yeah, I'm assuming people are thinking ahead, but I think it's hard for anyone not to get wrapped up and excited with the message that DeSantos brings. Any player would jump at the opportunity to play for a guy that's that competitive and wants to win that badly. He's got a great pedigree in coaching. You know, he's got a lot of Portugal in him, and he's just a, you know, massive fan of the game. And you know that rubs off on his players, and you can tell that when he's coaching. Yeah. In all four languages that he speaks, and speaks them all on the pitch, which is pretty neat to watch.
He's grinded it out with so many teams, at Trois Rivières Attack,
Montreal
Impact, USL.
He's put in his time, and he likes what he's putting together, and I think people are respecting that.
And another thing that really ties a lot of these players together, and also Mark Dos Santos, is spirituality. Like, is there anything you can tell us about, like, how much religion plays a role in the squad?
Yeah, and I, admittedly, as someone who's not a particularly religious person, I found it really interesting this season to watch kind of that unfold, you know. And I know there's obviously a number of guys who are very, very religious or very spiritual in one way or another, be it whatever religion that is. And yeah, it's a huge part, I think, in soccer more than a lot of other sports. I know Mark DeSantos is a very religious guy, and he's you know, none of them shy away from that. It's all a huge part of their existence, and they have a chaplain, Paul, who's just a, you know, as I said, I'm not a religious guy, and I just find him a fascinating person to talk to because he's got this great philosophy on you know, the importance of spirituality and faith and working that in with the, you know, physical aspect of sport. And so even for someone who maybe doesn't buy into where his message is based from, it's interesting to hear a guy whose chaplain career has always revolved around sport. And he's a big kind of support for some of the guys that need that kind of guidance on the team. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Chris, do you have any final words for today's podcast? Hopefully this won't be the last time.
Final words
of it.
No, this has been fun. I think just we're getting there, finally. It seems like this break between seasons has been long, just when it seemed like the team was starting to get some momentum and get going and excitement building, and you have to take a long break. But it'll be fun to come back in a giant, brand new stadium. I think you're going to see a team that's... And they said it today, too. Like, they're just so... Getting into a new place like that is going to be such a big motivator that I wouldn't be surprised to see them come into the gates with a few positive results right off the bat. And if they could, you know, if they could win the first couple and, you know, get their first away one against Edmonton and then come back and beat New York, that would be in front of, hopefully, 15 or 20,000 people. That would be ideal. But yeah, it'll be fun.
For sure. We can't wait. So on behalf of everyone, I just really would like to thank you, Chris, for coming and doing this. We really appreciate it, and I think our listeners do too. And before the podcast is over, actually, Kendra has a little gem for you. So Kendra, why don't you go ahead and introduce the next segment?
Well, a little while ago, I had the opportunity to speak to some of the players and do some interviews and ask them about, you know, kind of like where they've come from, where they're hoping to go in the future, and just kind of like how they got to Ottawa and onto this team. So I had the opportunity to interview Andres Frazenga a few weeks ago, and I just have an excerpt from the interview that we did, and we talked a little bit about him going to Uruguay and playing there, and then also he gave me some insight of what he thinks about MLS and North American soccer.
I was just going to ask you about that, like, how is the football culture different from Canada, and like, how did you fit into that?
It took me time to fit in, not because I come from the roots, it comes in my family, you know. Just seeing how they breathe soccer is totally different, because that's their way out. I think that's anywhere in South America. Their ticket out of poverty is playing soccer, right? So that's like the way to save the family. So they take a practice is like a game for them. It's crazy. So I learned a lot, not only on the field, off the field, in change rooms, being in the change room with guys I've played in Spain, Italy, and big teams, just taking their messages, you know, the respect that has to be inside of a locker room, mm-hmm. respect towards coaches, respect to yourself, right, as a professional. I learned a lot that I don't think I would have learned being here.
Yeah, oh, for sure. What about the support? Well, obviously the support is, like, huge. I guess my question is, how did you see that when you were there?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. Where I played professionally in First Division, we don't have 15,000, 20,000 fans, but the ones we had were just crazy.
Yeah.
They're constantly singing during the game. And
yeah.
It's a different, but there's also pressure that, you know, if you lose Saturday and you go out Saturday night, it's not going to be a pretty a fun Saturday night for you. So it's type of one of those things. I guess it's because of the way the league is kind of set up, like with relegation and things. Because... NASL, MLS, you know, you can come in last, but the next year you're in the same league, you're playing
exactly.
against the people.
Yeah, yeah.
And you come in last, you go down to B, you get paid less, everything just goes down for you, and you have a family to support and things, so that's an extra motivation. That's why it's such a different type of soccer anywhere in the world. I think NASL and MLS do great jobs, just that the pressure isn't the same as me coming in last, I'm still going to play you next year. Right, so it's different. But.
I was thinking about that the other day, and this is like an aside, but do you think that promotion relegation would work in North American soccer? Like, I would love to see it, but...
It has a... I kind of
need
to explain it because... I'm just going to go off MLS here because I know a bit more.
Because
the MLS owns every team, so everyone has a budget, right?
Yeah.
So if every team was owned by one person, like each individual team had its owner... You can invest all the money you want and bring the best players so you win.
Yeah.
And the teams that don't invest, it'll show after and then you'll get relegated, you know. But having a budget, you can't, you're really competing. It makes it even, fair, because you go to Real Madrid, you see the difference between Real Madrid salaries and it's complicated to explain. I think it would make it way more exciting, from my point of view.
Yeah.
not only for the fans but for the actual players, because you're playing with a pressure that if you leave North America, you won't. It might surprise you. Because you don't really see a lot of MLS players making moves anywhere. They all, usually, they stay in MLS, right? But not because they can't play anywhere else. It's because they're so, you get comfortable to a type of system that you don't really find the need to leave. But let's say you leave and you go, I'll give you Italy, and you're in last place in Italy. It's not the same as being last place in MLS. I'm pretty sure you won't be able to leave your house in Italy. In MLS, you can go all every night and no one's going to really say anything to you. Right? Yeah, exactly.
That's a great interview, Kendra. And unfortunately, that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks for all for listening. Big thank you to Chris Hoffley for joining in. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Hoffley. And you can follow us at Ottawa Fury. And bye for now.
This vegetable dish was such a good idea.
Oh yeah!